This is Directional. With Chantal Ryan and Jörg Tittel.
I see you. Great song from the Avatar movie.
Never seen it.
You haven't?
No.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's this indie film about blue people. It's like basically Smurfs meets Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, I've seen neither of those two, so that's helpful.
Welcome to episode 12 of Directional.
Yes, Jörg's very amused about this.
The show, the patriarchy show.
I'm your dishonored guest in society.
Okay. So here we are on Directional episode 12, a perfectly gender balanced show in which we discuss the perfectly gender and otherwise imbalanced video game industry. So Chan, you we've been to some events, haven't we? Recent weeks.
We've been busy.
We've been busy not making games for the most part, and just talking about our games at events, haven't we?
Yeah, that's what it feels like. Really like us in this industry to talk a lot about the games when not making. Because we're very busy talking. And the paradox is you can't really get the game made without talking about the game. But the game doesn't get made while you're talking about the game. So, I think we've broken physics with this industry.
But maybe that's where AI comes in. Maybe we should just be able to talk about our games and then the AI makes them for us while we talk about them.
I mean, we're not too far off this flung future, I think. Actually, I do think we are, but in some conceptions, we are not. It's interesting to see how many people are trying to currently build games using AI. And actually, I have noticed, I'm going to reference Twitter, and I'm not very specifically not going to go into the Twitter discourse of the day. But it is interesting how with kind of this first wave of accessible ChatGPT and GPT technology, we had all these people come out and go, oh my God, it's so easy to code now. Our efficiency is incredibly increased, et cetera, et cetera. And we haven't actually heard much of a peep out of these people recently. And I would venture a guess that that's because they actually went ahead and tried out their ideas and found out that the guess the letter technology isn't particularly good at writing code or games after all.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's some corporations like Ubisoft, for instance, or whatever, that might make some games down the road entirely with ChatGPT, and we'll never know.
we can never tell.
We'll never know. But they'll still hire people on paper, but no one will be working for them. No, it's really interesting. There was actually this Assassin's Creed comparison between like the latest Assassin's Creed and some older Assassin's Creed, but not the original one. And there was like a rooftop jumping sequence, like, you know, from one pole to another thing, to a ledge, to whatever. And it was the same map, but projected into a different, like just in a different, like with a different graphical style now. I mean, it had evolved and whatever, and it was in a different city, but they'd literally just taken a whole chunk of a game from a few years ago, placed it in there. It's like, yeah, cool. What? It worked back then. So no one will notice. Different looking rooftop. It's really weird.
And I assume some people noticed.
Some people noticed, yeah. And it was quite funny to see them like literally just, you know, split screen, you know, next to each other. But, you know, I guess there's a lot. So that it, technically, this is as if an AI had made it. You just take that one sequence, which was fun, put it in there, change the graphics around a little bit, and there you go. But the physical thing is interesting, the going to events, because, well, we have to do it. And because we... because it turns out that interfacing with human beings is kind of what all of this is about, even if they end up sitting in front of a computer or putting on a headset or whatever. And it's like I just came back from Kyoto, from Bit Summit, which I have to say was incredible.
You do keep bragging about what an amazing time it was. Definitely not rubbing it in.
I am absolutely rubbing it in. And it's just only because I failed to go to Japan so often in my life that when I finally now arrived, together with Ryan from Wolf and Wood, the developers of both C Smash VRS and The Last Worker, two of our collaborations.
Congratulations on your successful C Smash launch, by the way.
Thank you. It's so far so good, you know. It's very exciting. We have like a massive update coming in August, which is like bigger than a 2.0 upgrade. It's just insane how much we're adding to it, and I don't know. I'm just very proud of the team. But the, you know, poor team having to work away while Ryan and I quote unquote work in Kyoto. but it was actually crazy work, because it turns out when you're doing a VR game, which is about sort of, you know, hitting balls in space and moving about, some people really, really move about. And so there are some people who would just sort of jump like 2 meters sideways to catch a ball, like, you know, into the next, like into the neighboring booth. And it was so funny. We had this booth next to us. We were in the sort of VR section. There were only three VR games at the show. And in the VR section, there was next to us, there was this wonderful booth of this like audio, VR, game, which was made by a, half, blind team of programmers and designers. So it was like had their half blind, half of the development team were blind developers, the others, are, you know, sighted. And they had such a beautiful, serene, quiet booth. And there we are, these idiots with our jumping like freaks. And we're trying to keep people from either killing themselves or others, or the TV that we rented from PlayStation for 3 days straight. It was really quite intense. So yes, we did work. Thank you very much. We didn't just party in Japan.
Yes, I like the way you had to tell yourself that.
Well, you know, I'm here to, make sure that the patriarchy gets respected for all the great work that it does.
It's very important that you announce all of your accomplishments, no matter how small or large.
So, Chantal, what is it that you think you may have accomplished last weekend then? Where were you?
I was at one of Australia's largest anime and video game and nerd conventions, Avcon. happens to be held in my little city in Adelaide, Australia. And yeah, we were also showing our game, Dark Web Streamer. It was quite lovely. Always enjoy seeing how people respond to something you've spent years making and still gonna spend years making, tragically. I accomplished things in the way of the patriarchy. I actually spoke on a panel for women.
Oh, so, no.
Doing my bit. Actually, on that topic, while I'm thinking about it, I've instated a rule, and that is when people invite me to a conference or a convention and ask me to come talk on their lovely panel or workshop for women in games, I do have a rule that I and every other woman on the panel needs to also be offered a talking spot elsewhere, whether that's a solar talk or whether that's talking on another panel. And that is because it is incredibly important that women and other marginalized people in the industry not get reduced to this kind of singly dimensional identity that we have. We all have so much more expertise and skill and talent and knowledge to bring than, you know, I happen to have grown up presenting as a woman. Let me tell you all about the trauma of that. I also
That's what we hear as a representative of the patriarchy. It's very important for me to hear about your struggles.
Keep speaking over me, man. My other rule is that if you are not a marginalized person and you want me to come talk on your workshop and save the women's and others from the plight of being a woman or othered person in the industry, you gotta pay me. And that is because I've had a lot of people ask me to do things like go over to their companies, their venues, their shows, whatever, and give a talk that is aimed at women or other marginalized people. And when I have kind of said, okay, what's your budget? They've looked at me like I have two heads. And they've been like, well, I just thought you'd want to help women. You know, we're donating our time and our space. And I'm like, my dudes, you're literally using diversity and equality initiatives to spurk how progressive your company is. That's a media play. You're asking me to go do the hard labor of putting the time in to actually plan out what needs to be said and covered. And you're asking me to kind of go over my personal lifetime of trauma in order to try to assist other people through them. That's a fuck ton of birth time and emotional labor, and you just cannot ask people to be putting the hard work in for free when, you know, you're essentially benefiting from it. And I bring this up because it's really important for everybody to be aware of what they're asking when they do ask marginalized people to come and do things like workshops or panels, etc. You've got to make sure that there is an even compensation being done.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting how we are still very often exposure still is being used very much in both the media and also with at physical events. Yeah, but it's great for you. You'll have a platform. You know, people will. And it's like, dude, like this is, I'm bringing something valuable to this event. And does it like, I mean, the fact that yes, like when you, especially when people are doing very often token sort of events to pretend that they actually care about these issues. I mean, look at Game Develop, Developer Brighton this year. Fascinating that was an event. I didn't go because I was in Kyoto. But you know, there was some sort of talk being given by some weird publisher or whatever about how they now use AI to, I don't even know what other nonsense was, to control their employees or some other absolute nonsense. And so there was this talk about that happening there. And it's like, so there was a committee of people deciding on the value of that talk. And I go, oh, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, let's absolutely do that. That's progressive. People want to hear about this. While at the same time, then probably rolling out a couple of, you know, as what, you know, women, how they're being treated badly by the industry. It's like, no, no, you literally have just platformed someone who wants to dehumanize everyone, like within the company. Like you've given a platform to that. You don't get to then pretend that you care about, you know, marginalized people of any kind. Because you're happy with someone wanting to marginalize everybody, so it's people should get paid or at least be compensated another way. And the thing is, like, I'm annoyed by that. I actually think I want to see a panel at one of these game shows, game festivals or conferences or whatever, about, you know, the way women are being treated, that is actually all men. Because, and then have women in the audience asking them fucking questions. Because that's kind of, that is the issue, is that the men are not being questioned. Like, that is the problem. Like, that, and challenged. Like, put them all on stage. I doubt that anyone who's like a anti, like an anti-feminist or whatever would dare to go on stage an event like that. But even us allies, put us on stage and then ask us questions, challenge us, find out if we really are doing enough. Or perhaps also allow men to voice their stories about how they have either failed or have seen other men fail. Because, I mean, it is still predominantly male who are doing all this shit. I don't know. That would be interesting to me. And then allow women to actually talk about their fucking work, like, instead, you know, while the men have that panel. Like,
now that we've corralled them over that, let's get to the real shit, people.
Yeah, then have all the interesting, creative, women-led panels happen at the same time while tomatoes are being thrown at the men.
Worked so well. But, yeah, it's interesting. There are so many layers of politicality that go into even, you know, things like what are the contents of shows or panels or talks being held at a conference? Who are the guests? What are the skews and splits? I've talked about, you know, paying attention to what stages particular people and particular topics are put on. Are, you know, women and other marginalized people being put on the small stage when they give their talks? And are, you know, it just, there are so many layers deep. And the thing is, like, this is very much a dialogue. It's not about, you know, just coming down on everyone and being like, oh, you guys aren't doing things good enough, you suck, this, you know, you're all bad and you're all wrong. It's about saying, hey, we have to think more about this kind of thing. We need to engage with these things, because as we make progress, we make room for further progress and more complex levels of progress. So before, the issue used to be, Jesus, there are no marginalized people talking on panels at all. Now we've kind of at least crossed that hump a little bit, and now we can begin to tackle issues like what kind of stages are they on? What kind of marketing or platforming are these talks getting?
Absolutely. But because it is all marketing, like, everything is essentially marketing. I mean, whenever you give someone a platform, allow them to speak about something, regardless of what it is, it is that. And therefore, but the way also marketing works, it likes to invade spaces, whether it's billboards or time or screen time or whatever. And so for an event, like, if an event actually genuinely cares about a certain issue getting attention and bringing positive change, then indeed, give it the biggest stage. Like, give it the biggest stage during the most popular time. And if people don't show up, then use that as a way to say, like, well, the industry doesn't care about this issue, therefore, next year, we need to give it an even bigger stage.
I love that. Like, it's creating talking points, you know? This is kind of like the power of theater. You take a photo of the empty room and circle that around and you say, hey guys, not good enough. Yeah. I'll actually never forget, we gave, when I say we, it was myself, Ashley Wright Blake from Andromeda Entertainment, Lee Alexander, who we have an episode with that you should absolutely check out because it was one of my favorites, and also Anya Kerms. we four did a panel called What the Fuck People, It's 2023, Conversations We Still Need to Have About Being a Woman in the Games Industry. Might also win an award for longest panel title ever. But we, before we had the panel, we did talk about who we thought the audience might be. And Lee, who has been in the industry for over 20 years, said, you know, I've done a lot of these, and the fact is people aren't really going to show up. You know, we're putting a lot of effort into something that probably just like some of the women will show up for, and it's going to be a big ado about nothing, essentially. But we were absolutely stoked to see that every seat in the stage was full. People were standing. They stood the entire time out in the cold. We actually had a massive crowd. You attended, yeah, which I appreciated. But there were a lot of people who showed up because they were genuinely interested. And I think, like, Lee's experience, having watched the industry kind of grow and evolve, she's seen that trajectory. And so it was kind of like this year we pulled this really big, impressive crowd. And that's a result of the efforts that have been being made like over many years now.
Yeah. I mean, at Reboot Development in particular this year, I love that event. I made a point of, you know, talking to Damir and Katharina, the organizers, and say like, yeah, I'm going to come if, you know, because I last went in October before that, you know, if you guys actually achieve, you know, something close to gender parity, at least. And Damir said to me, well, can you help us? Because we've had some issue getting speakers and stuff with, you know, post-COVID, you know, people are afraid to either travel or whatever. I'm just like, we all have to learn how to do this again in a way. And so I did. I mean, I brought like 14, you know, I convinced 14 women to come and said like, it's the best place, really, truly the best event. And I was really, really happy with that. I haven't like tweeted about that or bragged about it or any of this kind of crap online. Cause that's, I don't believe that doing the right thing is,
would be weird,
but a lot of people do, you know, and that's literally what a lot of these festivals and conferences do, by putting on a sort of pseudo caring, panel, and then ultimately disregarding everything that the panel is about by allowing predators to dominate the spaces elsewhere. But doing the fair thing is not something one should brag about. It's just something you should fucking do anyway. I firmly believe that, but. It was an amazing thing attending your panel there, because it was under the sun. We had this beautiful view as well. And it was like almost an infinite sort of audience, because we could, yeah, there were seats, but we could also sprawl around this pool. And it was amazing. It was so positive. And it could have easily gone on for another hour. I had to sort of host a VR panel on the opposite side of, on the other side of the, the terrace just immediately after, but it could have easily ran for another hour, because there's so many questions, there's so many things to discuss with this issue. But tell me, like, did you experience any sort of interesting stuff at the last weekend?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch we could talk about, and there are positive and there are negatives as well. So, you know, we always want to hear the juicy negative stuff, because it's always interesting. We had lovely feedback, and, I can just say the generic. We had some lovely comments. We had people saying game of the year, even though it's not close to finished. We had a few people even say, you know, this is already my favorite game of all time, which, mind-blowing. But, you know, I had some interesting experiences. I talked to a lot of people. That's kind of my job when I'm at a convention. I'll chat to them about the game and my story. And so I had a few experiences that are maybe more unique to being a woman in the industry. And so, like, I guess one time there was a guy standing there wearing sweatpants, and it was
nice.
Pointed out to me, actually by my husband after, that the guy had been very excited while talking to me about the game and what he enjoyed. And he had actually maintained an erection that entire conversation. So, you know, that's it. Maybe he just was really into the game. Who knows?
Wow.
If only you guys could see Yug's face right now.
Does your game support joystick controls?
No, I'll send them over to Rez for that kind of good time.
Oh my god. Wow. But you didn't notice it. You just
You know, his eyes were up there. So I'm well trained to keep the eyes up there. Unlike yes. some.
That eye contact must have done it. But she's staring into my soul. talking about her game's features.
Yeah, well.
Wow.
So that's story number one. Story Beautiful. Number two was someone came, a guy, was standing there watching the game, and I kind of went over and briefly was like, you know, this is the game. Are you interested in playing? And he said yes, and I said, okay, hop on. And I ushered him over, and I went to speak to someone else. And then I turned around about 2 minutes later, and I realized he was no longer on the game, which is odd. Usually people play for quite a while. But he was still standing there, and it was like he was kind of loitering, waiting for me. And so I went back, and I was like, oh, like, was there a problem? And he was like, oh, it just seemed very dark, very, very dark. And I was like, well, yeah, it is a psychological horror game. That was
light web streamers coming soon.
That's a sequel. And yeah, so essentially, like, we got talking, but he didn't really stop talking. And every time I kind of tried to edge away, he kind of managed to park the conversation until I finally had to just very, you know, strongly assert some boundaries and pull myself away. A few hours later, I went to talk on a panel, and I didn't notice him in the audience, but when I walked off the stage from the panel, he was just like off to the side of the panel waiting for me and started speaking to me again, but I had a whole bunch of people waiting to talk to me, so I excused myself and went to speak to them. And then actually this morning, or maybe last night, I woke up and checked my email and saw I had an email from somebody in my business email, which is listed on my business card. And it talked about how this person, we talked about these topics, and he'd felt that we had a real connection. A connection, among other things. There were other things in that.
And if I'd been wearing sweatpants, you would have seen to what degree our connection was profound.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to be checking from now on. It's going to be called the sweatpant check, and it's going to be a metric. So, you know, just that was. Those are not the only stories from this weekend, but yeah, you can get a little taste of the highs and lows. Taste was a terrible word to use there, but the highs and lows of being a game dev, and particularly, go back to being a woman in the industry, where giving out your card can be a little rough sometimes.
Well, you know, I mean, technically, if you actually cared about forests and trees, you wouldn't just make paper cards anyway, you absolute monster.
Alternatives, yuck.
But no, it's interesting because like Kyoto actually was the first time I've been to a game show where there is, and that is, you know, of course, testament to Japanese culture and based on, you know, mutual respect for the most part. People really are very nice.
What?
Yeah, it was I did witness one horrific event actually while in Kyoto. Is that it's actually quite, I'm still quite traumatized by it. Actually, it was someone actually. I'm sorry, I just need a minute. Someone honked at another car.
No.
Yeah. I did. It was like a, it was a, like a Kyoto drive-by, as they call that one. It was intense.
I'm so sorry.
And yeah, people turned around and they went like, "Nanda yo."
The fuck?
Yeah. And it was literally, and it was so funny because like Ryan comes back to Newcastle, like we talk like a couple days later, and Ryan is on the phone, he's like, we're talking about some thing that we have to add to the game or whatever, and in the background someone's like, "Oh yeah, fuck off, mate. Are you fucking, where you fucking going, man? Watch where you go, you fucking cunt." And I'm like, well, I guess you're back in Newcastle now, aren't you? And it's but it was it's interesting. It's like it was so fucking nice. And people just people would line up. Sometimes we'd have like 30 people, like group, like gathered around our screen, watching someone like go crazy and try to kill everyone around them. So we wouldn't see Smash VRS and out now on the PlayStation VR 2 worldwide. And people, and some of them would line up and to play, of course. And I was like, so who's next? And then people would just organize themselves into a line, but they wouldn't just stand in the line. They're like, "Oh no, they were here first, and they were here, and oh, it's fine. I will wait and whatever." And it's like, Jesus Christ, what is going on? Like, people care about each other. Like, it was freaking incredible. Honestly, what are we doing? And what am I doing in the UK?
Have you thought about leaving?
Yes, but you know, children and all that. You know.
Oh yeah, those pesky things.
Those, yes, those parasites. But yeah, so that's the thing. It's like, yeah, I would totally move there in the flash if I could, you know. And but it was really, that event truly was one, and great panels, great talks with a stage that is everyone can hear. Like it's sort of, it's in the center of the room. It's like if something is happening on that stage, you will know that it's happening. Everyone in the conference hall will know it's happening, but with lots of seats. So it's not, no topics and no talks are sort of shoved into a corner. It feels like a proper festival, you know. It's really nice.
So we need to take a leaf from Japan. And what do you think they're doing differently there that isn't being done here in terms of things like, you know, panels and organization?
Well, it's, I'm not sure that there were enough women on stage, but I didn't, because I was humaning a booth for 3 days, I didn't get to attend any talks. I just heard them while they were happening. But what was immense, I thought, was that the booths genuinely don't feel like marketing. Like it feels like people, like devs, really sharing their work with both professionals and regular civilians. There was a real gathering around, and it's like, it was just interesting. Like when you go to a Gamescom or whatever, you would rarely find, you know, a sort of Tim Schafer just standing among the crowd and stuff. That usually like move them into like a business thing and like have them do, you know, professional interviews all day.
From the unwashed masses.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not because Tim wouldn't want to hang out.
It's are washed.
Yeah, but it's true. It's like when you go to Gamescom, you've got these like weird castles, like in which all these businesses like hide behind these walls with like these.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, it is bizarre, isn't it? I was really disconcerted. The industry area, you're walled off. They had like kind of these like secretary bodyguards who were like, "Are you here to see somebody?"
Yes. No, this is the professional event during which to which freaks have been invited, and I just want to waste someone's time. It's very weird. No, it's just a very, and also there is no festival atmosphere in Cologne, whereas here we would gather at some lovely bars and with fellow developers, be invited into like Chuhai Labs, for instance, had a party, and which was wonderful. And then also on the day after the festival wrapped, we were all invited to Chuhai's. A lot of us were invited to Chuhai's. Not all of us, because you can't have 25,000 people inside Chuhai Labs offices. But we went, and it was 44 degrees outside. It was so ridiculously hot. And there was this big festival on, you know, where they carry these huge, you know, towering things with humans on them, you know, through the streets, this parade, and all these people, the streets were all completely shut off. And Ryan and I, hungover as we were, because we did celebrate a little bit, having survived the show the night before. It was amazing going to Chuhai's air-conditioned office, have some pizza, have an unwind. But it was so amazing to just be invited into people's spaces, and it felt truly human. And maybe it's because Kyoto is a small city, you know, and the event is genuinely indie. But the fact that it is genuinely indie is also a feeling that I feel, you know, I'd love to see somewhere else. Oh, actually, there was one moment. I haven't discussed with her whether, you know, I can talk about this. But there was a person. She runs a games festival, and she was at some point. I wasn't there, but multiple people saw it. Sort of attacked by a guy by the riverside where we like to drink at night and gather with everyone, and it's like you take advantage of developers. And because apparently it costs $50 or something to submit your game for the festival. And it's like, I'm so sorry you feel that way, but you know, we also have to freaking pay for some stuff. And it's less than the price of a video game at retail, you know?
Yeah.
And so like full on attack, like at like 2 a.m, you know, sort of like in her face kind of stuff. He was an American, I think.
Managed to fly over to Japan, but God forbid we pay $50 to submit a show on game somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bizarre. It's really bizarre. I don't know. People will pick some strange battles, but I love game festivals, actually.
You love games. Good to know.
I love games, but this really restored my faith in like the public events, because you know, like at Reboot Developed, it's a professional conference, and I loved it, and it was convivial and human and all that jazz, and it was amazing to see you there and a lot of great friends. But to go to a games festival that also has that feeling with the public let in, with, you know, which is supposedly also about selling, obviously, but it doesn't feel like it was. It felt genuinely like a festival, like a cultural exchange.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
A festival is essentially a joy environment. That's what makes it a festival. And, you know, video games should be inherently founded on joy, like, and the events we have around games should absolutely be founded on joy. And I think this is where things like Gamescom actually fall down, because we see it's almost just like this elaborate display of like money and wealth and success. We've got these like big weird airplane hangar environments, and it's just like, who can set up the flashiest area for their games, who's kind of dropping things in with cranes, and who spent $500,000 or $5 million on their displays. And it just, like, it really seems to reduce that fundamental spirit of what games are meant to be about. They're not about the money, they're not about flashiness, they're just about that kind of simple pleasure of sitting down with something and experiencing someone's artwork and creativity, or, you know, that of a team, and of experiencing things together. And that's another thing, like, when you have massive lines to play games and you've got this kind of oppressive environment of, you know, like, oh, you're lucky to even be playing this game right now. Yeah, we do. Events like that just cultivate this oppressive environment versus joyous environment. Mm-hmm. And that is not the vibe I think a game should have.
Yeah, people are just like, don't look at me while I'm playing this game now. I've been standing for 3 hours in the line playing this game. Just get away from me. And it's like, that's what Gamescom feels like. No, give me another minute.
Yeah. You line up for 3 hours, 5 minutes, and all of a sudden people behind you are about to, like, launch at you with knives.
It's crazy. And it's like, and here, like, I mean, it's of course, it's kind of difficult with a game like a different. Yes. Paul, please edit the stumble out. Different. But it's different with it's a physical game and quite as performative a game as Sea Smash is. I mean, but it was actually really until we were doing this booth to realize how fun it is to watch people play it with a big screen in front of them, with a whole audience sort of gathered behind them. And it doesn't matter how well they do, people would cheer them and go like, "Gambatte kudasai! Go, go, go!" And everyone's like, "Yeah!" You know, every time, like, you know, points were scored. It was so freaking cool to watch.
Joyous.
And it's gorgeous. And it's like, and then I saw that we weren't unique in this either. I saw that there were games that were just on flat screens. Where people were gathered around and also were sort of really, really engaging in other people playing it, playing those games. But also there's this wonderful booth next to us, which had three or four sort of homebrew, sort of arcade experiences. And one of them, for instance, had this like cola bottle, which you have to shake really, 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 really fast. And then once you've shaken it, then this rocket animation plays, and you see how well you managed to shake it. And I broke a day's record once, and then I failed the next day. That was really fun. Another one, which was an amazing idea, it was a sort of endless runner, or jump and runner with a coin, like a little the input for the game is the control input is you throw a coin into a little coin slot like an arcade machine. And when the coin drops, the character on screen jumps, and he's walking automatically from left to right. And if you make him jump and pick up another coin, then a coin drops out of the coin machine, gives you another, you know. It was awesome. Like, this kind of stuff, and people would just gather around it and just enjoy the creativity, the madness of it. It was so good. I loved it. You know, we need to do more of this.
Yeah, I was definitely struck the first time we shared the game in public, because our game is like primarily text-based. You know, it's got other visuals going on, but most of the story happens in text. And so I absolutely conceived of this game as the kind of game you just sit down by yourself at night and you play, and you kind of, it's almost like reading a book that's always changing. Mm-hmm. But when we shared the game, I was absolutely I have no words for it, just overwhelmed, flabbergasted by how many people gathered around behind us simply to watch other people play the game. They were fascinated by the kind of like unfolding of someone's story. But yeah, so this like game I thought was a deeply personal experience. Yag is dying. Was people were people who like was self-confessed not gamers were coming IRFA to our games simply to watch and to You're laugh welcome. At the things that happened to other people, their misfortunes. You know, friends love to gather and watch one of their friends play, and it's really striking how even like a single player game can be such a kind of deeply bonding and connecting community experience and friendship experience and, you know, team experience even. So, you know, I know, Yag, you talk a lot about how games are all about people interfacing with people. And something I'm also very passionate about. You know, games are just like all artworks in a way that us creatives throwing our voice. We're able to throw our voices across the world and across space and time. And we're able to kind of share our perspectives and our experiences and the things we've learned and the things we care about. We're able to share them with people even when we're not around and not there to respond. So yeah, games festivals are a really great way of kind of seeing that practice take place, where you get to see in physical terms people connecting over games, whether or not they're actually playing. It's that sharing of a joy experience and a play experience that really moves people.
Yeah, I may be working on the games festival. I think I should start one. No, I'll tease the idea that I may have been working on launching a little festival. Well, it will start little. Of course, it'll become the biggest festival ever.
Biggest, baddest, bestest, richest.
Those booths are going to be so huge. The content is going to be so loud.
So high.
There's going to be a whole castle of Call of Duty. Like, yeah, it's going to be incredible. And the joy on people's faces when they'll stand in line at this humongous Call of Duty booth. Oh, you've never seen such joy on people's faces. I'm inspired by it. I'm inspired by these two things, these two events, especially in games and
Gamescom and Bit Summit.
Yeah, yes. Bit Summit and Reboot Develop I think we're onto something. I think like it was genuine joy, and when you see that on people's faces, when they really share something, when they really love something, it. That has meaning to me. I love it, and it transcends all cultures, and it's completely universal. Like, I mean, I had to explain complex sort of physical movements and stuff in VR with people who had headsets on and didn't speak a word of English, right? And it was interesting as well because it's post-COVID, and you know, and of course, like the idea of touching someone's hands and like you know guiding their finger to a certain button or whatever. Should be weird in a way, but people invite that and they go, you know, please, yeah, show me how to do this. And so it became not by design, but it sort of becomes a very, very tactile, very sort of very, very exchange between people.
Intimacy.
And of course, all based on, unfortunately, on respect and everything, but ultimately joy. And it was really cool. It felt like we were all not engaging in something digital, but it was something physical. Like we were sort of teaching each other literally how to play tennis or to swim or whatever. It feels really good. I know that games are getting there more and more, you know. I know they'll become more and more physical, more and more psychological, which, you know, your game does, which also has a physical effect, of course, you know, the feeling of fear and dread and anxiety and most importantly, a sort of intellectual also exchange with the themes of a game. Those are all physical things. And that's why your game will be not just the game of the year, but people's game that people will just go like, yeah, this is a thing that this is a game that has stuck with me ever since I played it. It's a game that, when I think of video games, that's the one that did things in a significantly different, original, and impactful way. And when I think of it, it makes my body feel something through my, regardless of whether I'm wearing sweatpants.
Yes. Lofty predictions from Jörg Tissel, my friends. And I think with that, we'll wrap up this episode of Directional.
Goodbye, everybody. And see you next time.
Directional is hosted by Jörg Tittel in London, Chantal Ryan in Adelaide, and produced by Paul Bennin in Los Angeles for Rapid Eye Movers. The theme song was composed by Oliver Krauss and Frally Hines. Follow us on Twitter @directionalshow and listen to past episodes at directional.show. See you next time.